Today is Thursday, February 20th, 2020. We're going to hear Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's shiur on Parshas Mishpatim.
I want to welcome everybody to the shiur. As Jerry would say, we're milchik. Is there going to be class next week? There will be class next week. We're going to daven Marv 3 minutes after the class. Jerry sends his regards, tells me to tell everybody that every week, so I'm doing it. And we're sending our regards to him. I want to thank Young Israel, Rabbi Berger, for allowing the class to continue here. Rav Moshe, the floor is yours. Oh, by the way, silence your phones. Thank you.
Famous question is, Torah tells us in this week's Sedra that the Jewish people, when they accepted the Torah, they said, Nasa v'nishma, I will do and I will listen. Now, it's interesting, the idea of Nasa v'nishma, I will do and I will listen. And the Medrash says that when the Jewish people said Nasa v'nishma, and because they said Nasa, we will do, before they said Nishma, we will listen. So 600,000 malachim, angels, came down and placed two crowns on their heads, one for Nasa and one for Nishma. And it could perhaps, to a certain degree, it's mentioned that the Jewish people were compared to Malachim at that time. They were compared to angels. Angels are agents of God. And an agent does things because he was told to do them. It's not because he decides to do them. And in a sense, to a certain degree, that is the ultimate level of service of God. It's an act of submission. It's an act of submission to God. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't try to understand what God is saying. We certainly have to try to understand what God is saying. But we do it because it's an act. It's an act of submission to God. Now, and then there is, and the question is, what is the idea of Nasa v'nishma? That they do and listen. So there are all kinds of explanations about Nasa v'nishma. My uncle explains Nasa v'nishma. He uses words of the Baal HaTanya, Das Elyon, Das Tachton. But basically what it means, there is the tendency of man, and then the evaluation of man. Who is a person? A person isn't what he defined by what he does after he evaluates and concludes. But a person is what his tendency is to do right away. Because that is who he is. And that's the idea behind Nasa v'nishma, The idea behind Nasa V'Nishma is that we do the Torah. That's our tendency. It doesn't mean that we don't have to understand it. We do have to understand it afterwards. But we have to have this disposition, this tendency to react in fulfilling the commands. And the Beis Halevi, my great-great-grandfather, he says something very interesting. And it probably had to do with what was going on at that time. He says there are two mitzvahs, two reasons for learning Torah. One reason for learning Torah is we learn Torah in order to know how to act. If we don't learn the laws of Shabbos, we will not know how to observe Shabbos. If we won't learn the laws of prayer, we will not know the correct manner to pray. Any question that comes up is decided on the basis of our study of the laws regarding that situation, that mitzvah, and what's allowed and what's not allowed. If I don't study the laws of kashrus, I won't know how to observe the laws of kashrus. So one perception, and to a certain degree, this is probably the greater perception of Jewish law. When I say the greater perception in terms of the way people understand it, we study Torah in order to know how to act within the Torah. But then there is what Reb Chaim Volozhiner would call Torah Lishma, to learn Torah for its own sake. Now, that doesn't mean to learn Torah as history or as sociology, but to learn Torah because it was given to us by God to learn. And there is a large part of Torah, certainly today, doesn't have any application. Kachim for the main part doesn't apply today, but still it is as much Torah as Masechta Shabbos, as the laws of Shabbos is. So we learn Torah for Torah's own sake, just for the sake of studying Torah. That's, he said, that's what it meant, Nasa V'Nishma. If it had said, Nishma, I will listen, and I will do, that would give the implication that the whole mitzvah of Torah is only in order to know what to do, and that's certainly very important. But the study of Torah, he said, is important as an end in itself as well. So therefore it says, Nasa V'Nishma, in other words, I will do and I will learn, meaning that the learning has value besides telling us how to act. The Torah itself has value. And to a certain degree, it is through Torah that we become, this is actually the Hasidic approach of Torah Lishma. Through the study of Torah, one becomes closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, closer to God. Now, there was a dispute between Reb Chaim Volozhiner, between the students of the Vilna Gaon, I guess. And for the main part, not that there weren't exceptions on both sides, but the Vilna Gaon as to what does it mean, Torah Lishma, Torah for its own sake. And Reb Chaim Volozhiner understood it very literally. A person should study Torah in addition to all the other reasons for studying Torah, in order to know how to act, and all of that, but just for the intellectual, but a religious intellectual, love of Torah. He said, of course, a person should use Torah to feel close to God, dveikus. But a person, in a sense, the Torah wants a person to mold his intellect on the basis of the God-given law of Torah. And the opinion of the Bala Tanya, and for the most part, that was what was accepted by most of the Hasidic groups. There are certain exceptions. They saw Torah Lishma as something of dveikus. It was a way to feel closeness to God. That's the reason why is it that Hasidim had a very strong emphasis on the saying of Tehillim. Hasidim, because Tehillim, in a sense, is the part of Torah that makes one have this personal attachment to God. So there's a strong emphasis because they see Torah Lishma as this idea of bringing us closer to God, dveikus, attaching ourselves to God. So Hasidim emphasize very much the saying of Tehillim. As a matter of fact, it's brought down that David HaMelech, when he composed the book of Tehillim, he said to God, I would like that someone who says Tehillim, and you have to realize most of the people who said Tehillim, many of them didn't even understand the Tehillim, but it was something that brought them closer to God. So those who said Tehillim should get the reward for those who learned the laws of Uksin and Ohalos. Those are two mesechtas, not in the Gemara, but in the Mishnayos, that are extremely, extremely difficult and deep. So it should have the same reward. And many of the Hasidim would use that to show the significance of Tehillim. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner said two things. First of all, the fact that he said it should be considered like somebody who did that, who learned Uksin and Hollis, so it means that Uksin and Hollis was on a higher level than Tehillim. However, and then he said, and we don't see that the Medrash says he asked God. The Medrash doesn't say that God answered him, that he'll do it. So now, my grandmother, she used to say all of Tehillim every night. She used to say all of Tehillim every night, but she would say that's if somebody, the Medrash is talking about somebody who says Tehillim. She said, but if you learn Tehillim with the explanations of the Rishonim and your own explanations, so then on its own merits, even without the request of David HaMelech, its Tehillim should be considered at a very high level. And that's how my grandmother would say Tehillim. She would study Tehillim. My father also, in his later years, every day he said all of Tehillim. But when you would talk to him, he had a pshat in every pasuk in Tehillim. An explanation, some kind of explanation in every pasuk Tehillim. I remember once there was some of the astronauts were in trouble, and at that time Rabbi Fassman came over to my father. He said, "Well, maybe they should say some chapters of Tehillim." So my father suggested two chapters right on the spot that they could say. And the Rebbe Fassman looked him over, so he said to my father, I see you had the same idea. My father said, no, you asked me. I told you. But to my father, the Hillel was always in his mind, so he could immediately say which Tehillim would be the appropriate Tehillim for whatever situation. So that's, but it was learned, but in any case, the idea was that Torah has an extreme benefit. A person should learn Torah not just because it teaches you how to act, which is certainly very important, but Torah has its own value, its independent value as well, either because of the way it molds our thinking in a spiritual realm, or because of the emotional attachment that it gives us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's how the Beis Halevi explains the Naseh Nishma. What's the significance of the Naseh before the Nishma? We'll do it, but the question that's raised by everybody is the Gemara in Shabbos tells us that God took a mountain. Now, it could be understood figuratively, whether it's figuratively or literally, but it has to be understood. God took a mountain, and he took the mountain, and raised it over the heads of the Jewish people, and he said, in tekablu es haTorah, if you accept the Torah, mutav, it's good. Vimlav, but if you're not going to accept the Torah, shom tehek furaschem, there will be your burial. So on one hand, the Jewish people are praised that they're considered like angels. When it comes to, because they said, Naseh v'nishma, we will do and we will listen. But on the other hand, we say that God more or less forced them to it. He held the mountain over their heads. They made an offer that they couldn't refuse. That's right. So how do we resolve the contradiction? So there are many answers given to that question. I remember the first time I was a young boy. The first time I heard my father ask the question, I was in shul and he was speaking, and he said, "Shnei ksuvim," he quoted the "Shnei ksuvim afishim zeh." You have two statements, two psukim. Here it's two medrashim that kind of achiyava hakasav hashlishi viachri beinehem until a third statement comes and resolves the contradiction. And here we have a contradiction that talks about the Jews in lofty manners because they said Naseh v'nishma, and then God raised the mountain over the head and said, in Kabbalah Satorah Mutav. Seems to be a contradiction. My father said, there's a third medrash. The third medrash says that God told to the Jewish people, give me a surety that you will keep the Torah, that you will observe the Torah. And the Jewish people offered the Yavos, the patriarchs. And God rejected that. And then they offered their children, and God accepted that. So my father suggested that the Jews were more than willing to accept the Torah for themselves. But what they weren't willing to do was to, in a sense, that the Torah should be for the future for their children. In a sense, to put their children in the position where they have to be committed to Torah observance. And that's the idea of Kafaleim Harkigigis. He raised the mountain over them. In other words, that they had to be pushed to do. And the truth of the matter is, it's very interesting, you see, that the Torah gives a lot of credit to Avram at the time of the Akedah. And the Torah does not give so much credit to Yitzchak at the time of the Akedah. Especially, there is a dispute how old Yitzchak was. Okay, if you say Yitzchak was a very young child, but most of the Midrashim seem to indicate he was in his 30s. You would think that the major credit of the Torah would be to Yitzchak. As we say in the Davni, as Haben HaNekar al Gabi HaMizbeach. But the answer is, the Torah knew the psychology of the Jew. And the Jew was ready to accept for himself the yoke of Torah. But the Jew was less ready, in a sense, to commit his children and future generations for Torah. And that's the figurative, of course it happened, but the idea of the tying of Yitzchak to the Mizbeach, the binding of Yitzchak to the Mizbeach, that represents the binding of future generations. So he had to bind himself to, he had to bind himself this was the idea of Kafaleim Harkigigis. And my father said, I don't remember if he quoted in the Meshech Chachma, he said, it says, Sham Tehek Furaschem. There your burial will be. It doesn't say Po Tehek Furaschem. Why? Sham, because in the later generations, in other words, now there is no problem, but when you deviate from the Torah later on, Shomtekvasim, there you're going to encounter a lot of difficulties, and you'll encounter destruction. So there. It will be a burial, in other words, a destruction. And I want to suggest, and also I think there's a teretz brought down either by Tosfos, the Yalkut Shimoni, or both, that the Torah should be, to answer the contradiction. And by the way, and with this is the Gemara says that even though they were forced to accept the Torah because the mountain was raised over their heads, Hadar Kibluhu b'me'ach Achashverosh, that they later accepted in the time of Achashverosh. What happened in the time of Achashverosh? The Megillah says, Kiyemu v'kiblu ha'yehudim aleihem v'al zaram v'al kol hanilvim aleihem. So they re-accepted the Torah. Now, and who did they accept it? Aleihem v'alzarim, for themselves and for their children. And there is, but, so the question is, why is it that the acceptance at the time of the time of Achashverosh was considered an acceptance for future, a voluntary acceptance for future generations. And the acceptance of the Torah initially at the time of Sinai was only voluntary for themselves, but was not voluntary for the future generations. And it's difficult to say, well, that's just the way it was. I think the way we could understand it is the following. It's something that I've discussed here a number of times. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Jews say Nasav and Ishma, and then they go up. Then 40 days later, they stand in front of a golden calf and they say Elu Alach Yisrael. And the same question, the Meraglim, leaders of the Jewish people, Rashi B'nai Yisrael Hema, they leave, and Rashi says when they left, Anashim Tzadikim, they were righteous people. And 40 days later, they instigate a rebellion against Moshe, against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, against God. They're ready to go back to Egypt. How are we to understand it? And this wasn't gangsters. It wasn't Dustin Vaviram. This was the leaders of the Jewish people. So how are we to understand it? But the answer is, as I always say, changing circumstances. A different milieu. Here they were with Moshe, in front of Moshe. They're gone from Moshe for 40 days. It's a different story. The circumstances change. And the same thing, there were leaders of the Jewish people. Sometimes you can find people could be anashim tzaddikim within a given situation. But when the situation changes, so the tzidkus, the righteousness, the commitment, the devotion, that all changes also. Only because the situation changed. One thing we know about changing generations, and it's probably very easy for us to understand it, because it's been, in this generation, it's been more dramatic, the change from two generations ago or three generations ago than in most generations. There are differences and different circumstances between generations. But think about the Jews of Europe and the war changes that took place. Certainly World War I brought dramatic changes. But let's say until World War I, there were changes, but the changes were much smaller and much slower. Then when World War I came and there was exposure to the outside world and whatever it was, there were major changes. And then the Jews leaving Europe and coming to America, that also was those were dramatic changes. I remember showing my father a picture of the Jews in Ellis Island, getting off the boat. It was very interesting. The men were all wearing kapotes, the long black coats, and the women coming off were dressed probably, the place closest to it would probably be Williamsburg today. And I showed my father the picture, and my father said to me, the next Shabbos they were all working in the sweatshops. Because the situation changed. It was impossible for them to make a living. I'm not criticizing anybody, but those were the facts of life. Changing situations. And you can have whatever commitment you want. And this is one of, you know, when we deal with Geiris, with conversions, that's the one question we have. We evaluate a candidate for Geiris. We demand that the candidate for Geiris be committed, to be observant and all that. Those are the... Today, a couple of years ago, those weren't the standards. But today, pretty much, those are the basic standards. But the one question that comes up is, what's going to happen? Now they will be committed. But what happens when the situation changes? If it's a ger that's single and then gets married? If it's a ger that lives in Chicago, that lives close to his shul, that's involved in his shul's activities? And then they'll move to somewhere else, to another city, where they don't have that same infrastructure. Or making sure that the ger has a Shabbos meal to go to or whatever, or is part of the community. It's very interesting. The Chinuch says the mitzvah of avas ger, loving a ger, is not just talking about someone who converts to Judaism. He says, let's say a new neighbor moves into the neighborhood who doesn't have roots in the neighborhood. There's a mitzvah to befriend him. And the truth of the matter is, these two different things really come together. Because when somebody converts to Judaism, and he's part of a community, so everybody knows him, he's part of the community. But then when he moves, so it's not just a question, anybody who moves doesn't have initially all these friends. To him, that represents a threat to his Judaism. That's a threat to his Judaism. So changing the biggest concern, we are concerned about the present. But the concerns of the present are obvious. The biggest concern is the changing circumstances. Will the commitment that he has now, the identification, the association that he has now with the religion, will he have that when circumstances change? It's not easy to make that determination. And in a sense, and we know, as time passes, that situations change. We know that. And they're changing quicker and quicker and quicker as time moves on. So this I think, was the idea. I don't know that we have to take it literally, that God raised the mountain over the Jewish people. But what the Medrash is telling us was the nature of the commitment that the Jewish people had at that time. At that time, under those circumstances, they really believed that they will be committed throughout history. How is it possible that people would think otherwise? After seeing Kriyas Yamsuf, after seeing all of that, after seeing the passage of time, but after the passage of time, the circumstances change, the memory dulls, and if it's a different generation, even though it's told over, doesn't have the same impact. So this is what the interesting thing is. Why is it that the situation? They saw so many miracles. Well, when the Jewish people went, when they went out of Egypt, they saw so many miracles. But when you take a look at the Megillah, so the Gemara says, Esther Menayin Men HaTorah. How do we know? Where is there a remez, a hint to Esther in the Torah? It says, "V'hanochi haster aster panai b'yamahu." I will hide my face at that time. Now, hester panim, we usually understand hester panim, and that's the way it's in the Torah usually. Hestapanim usually means there's time of trouble and God is hidden. God is hidden. The Holocaust, during the time of the Holocaust, God was hidden. But there's another type of Hestapanim. On the contrary, when God is doing miracles for the Jewish people, when he's saving us, but it's not like the miracles of old. The miracles of old were Kriyas Yamsuf, taking us out of Egypt, 10 plagues, negating the laws of nature. But nowadays, we don't have Kriyas Yamsuf. We don't have 10 plagues. But we have miracles anyway. But these are miracles that we can't define. We can't point our finger and say, how do you explain it? Because they'll give you lots of explanations. Mm-hmm. There'll be all kinds of explanations. But it's miracles anyway. That's Hestapanim. We don't see God, but we see, it's not obvious. And it's very interesting. Many say, you know, God's name is not mentioned in the Megillah. And the question is the Remez and all that, but there's indications of God, but the name of God is not mentioned in the whole Megillah. And I think the Maharal and the Sfasemis, they say, why isn't God's name mentioned? Ibn Ezra says, because the Megillah was sent out as a letter. And, you know, when you get letters from organizations, it gets tossed in the garbage before you open up the envelope. So they didn't want to put Mordechai and Esther didn't want to put God's name because there was a fear. It went to Chol Malchus, all the 120 states. So they didn't, and they were scared. What would happen to it? They didn't put. But the Maharal, the Sfasemis, I think they say God's name is not mentioned in the Megillah because God was hidden in the events of the Megillah. Because you take a look, you have a real story there. There was a party, and then there was a humming, and then Esther played her role. You don't see Kriyas Yamsuf. You don't see any of that. But it was all manipulated by God. And you know, how do we react to the Megillah? We react to the Megillah, we say, Hadonis Dineinu. After the Megillah is over, we say, we saw through those events. And even though there was no Kriyas Yamsuf, and there wasn't any of that, but we know it was God. Hadonis Dineinu, and not because it was. And the truth of the matter is, that seems to be part of the tradition of our war against Amalek. The Jewish people, when they encountered Amalek, as I've mentioned, when they encountered Amalek, they fought a war. It wasn't like Kriyas Yamsuf, where one Nachshon Ben Imnadav runs in. It wasn't like the 10 Makos where the Jews sat back and the 10 plagues took place. And they didn't do anything. They had to do it themselves. They had to go to war. B'char lanu anashim v'tzei hilochem ba'amalek. Choose for us people. And why did Amalek attack? Because they said, Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu imayin. The Jewish people sinned. Because they said, is God in our midst or not? Because for a few days they didn't see a Kriyas Yamsuf. So they said, Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu imayin, because unless there was an open miracle, continuously a different open miracle, every day they wouldn't see the hand of God. So Amalek comes. Amalek wants to have lack of recognition. Ein shmi shalem, vein kisi shalem, ad shimach Hashem Amalek min olam. My name is not complete. What does the name of God not being not complete mean? There wouldn't be recognition of God. And the, his his kingship will not be recognized by the whole world so long as Amalek is there, because that's the goal of Amalek. The goal of Amalek is to hide, is that God should be hidden, and no one should be able to penetrate the curtain of nature to see God. So that's the tradition. That's the tradition of Amalek, where God is hidden to not to see God. And this was what happened also at that time. Haman is the descendant of Amalek, and Haman wants God, does not want the Jews to see God, and the Jews themselves, they go celebrate together with Achashverosh, who was celebrating his, what he felt was his overpowering of God. And the miracles, God, even the miracles themselves, God is hidden. But he's able to, but we it's our obligation to penetrate the Megillah and to see the hand of God. Now, this is the idea. So when the Jews reaccepted the Torah, they were reaccepting the Torah in a situation where God's involvement wasn't obvious in the manner it was at the time of the splitting of the sea. But they accepted God because they were able to penetrate the events and see the hand, the hidden hand of God. And that's the acceptance of Torah for future generations. At the time of Matan Torah, it wasn't for future generations, even though they meant it for future generations. It wasn't for future generations because at that time, there were open miracles. There was almost a compulsion to observe the Torah. But Hodeh Kiblu B'mei Achashverosh, later on, time of Achashverosh, their miracles were hidden, and they accepted the Torah. That was an acceptance for future generations as well.
We will be davening in about 5 minutes. Mark, we need 3 minutes. We need everybody. And we have class next week.
Thank you, Rabbi.